That's a
unmistakable sound of Pharoah Sanders on tenor sax with an unmistakable tune, Equinox, composed, you might have guessed, by John Coltrane. It's from his 1987 album, O Lord, Let Me Do No Wrong. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we are following through with the promise of providing space for those who did not get in on Free Your Mind Friday, even though we added an extra day to our weekly forum last week, but we had such heavy traffic on air traffic that we just had to extend the time because I think this is important. I like the idea of people thinking out loud and talking out loud and sharing their thoughts and their views and analyses of the issues of the day. And of course, we are living at a time when there is so much happening all at the same time. It is hard to decide which issue or topic to just extricate from the whole swirling vortex of news. 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and let's get started talking. This is a forum, and the program devotes at least one of its five broadcasting days. And, of course, increasingly as we go, there's no rule here. We get a sense that people want to talk. So we open the phone lines and have you talk. Let's hear what you're thinking. Of course, you know, we are on the eve of yet another dog and pony show. That's the Republicans are having their final debate for the year tomorrow, appropriately and symbolically, in Las Vegas. It's a gamble, but that's where it's a gamble with your and my future. But that's where the debate is going to be held, in Las Vegas. And, of course, CNN, the leading news outfit that is begging, just absolutely begging for the sluices to open up and the campaign funds to flow, will be hosting this particular debate. But so much more is happening. We have the case in Baltimore that we discussed, the case of Officer Porter, William Porter, who was the first of the police officers to be tried in connection with the killing of that poor young man. I mean, it, every time I think about it, I get so upset about it, the Freddie Gray case. And since then, you know, so many cases have happened. And up until yesterday, it almost numbs the mind because it is happening with such alarming regularity. And all the more reason, I think, for people to see these things not as isolated incidents, but a message is being sent. What is the message? And how are we choosing to respond? This is the thing. All right, 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's go straight to Virginia. Darko, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm good. I'd like to say hello to the family and happy holidays and greetings to everyone.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Well, what's on your mind today?
Well, just listening to Justice Scalia was very telling for me. Of all the successful Black or Africans that are in the United States that are doing so well, how this judge can come out from the Supreme Court and make that statement about how Blacks should be in slower schools.
Darko, before you go any further, could you provide a little bit of context for your discussion today?
Well, this is based on, I forgot her last name, but this is based on Abby, who was trying to, a student who was denied admission to University of Texas and claimed that someone who was less qualified, such as an African-American, got in her place due to affirmative action. However, her grades were not up to par. So instead of applying to another school that will fit her situation and her academic record, she decides to take this up to the Supreme Court justice. And this is how Judge Scalia, one of the nine judges, who is basically attacking affirmative action and stating that, yes, that, you know, her place shouldn't have been given to a less qualified African-American, and that we deserve, our African-Americans or Africans in general, deserve to go to schools that are slower and much more on our speed, which I don't understand at all, you know. And I haven't heard, well, I've seen students from University of Texas that have a hashtag that states Stay Mad Abby, which is great because what they do is they have their graduation pictures at University of Texas, and I believe all over the United States, of African-American students, male and female, graduating and very proud, and also have the grades to acknowledge that they are, that they do belong there. And that's what I was very proud of. But what was telling to me is how in this day and age, I never thought, I mean, I came from Rutgers University, and I remember our president back in the 90s said that we were genetically inferior to do well in his course, and based on the bell curve, and it was a big hoopla and protest about it. And, you know, I heard it from the president himself that said it, but just to hear the judge say in this day and age, I mean, it's not unusual with the shootings and, you know, the rise of the Nazis, and I should say what Donald Trump is saying, and it's just frightening for me, and I feel like we don't have, like, a buffer, like, I don't think we have like a leader to say anything about it. Like, I haven't heard anything on the news other than the students that are fighting back against what Abby and Judge Justice Scalia said. But like, we don't have any leaders that are saying anything about this. You see what I'm saying? And it's just troubling. It's scary.
Well, it's. I would look at it a slightly different way. It is consistent with prior rulings of the U.S. Supreme Court on the matters of race. And that is what is troubling. It is so consistent with the slaveocracy of the South. And the so-called Supreme Court rulings, everybody thinks the Supreme Court is in fact supreme, that it is the wisest collection of jurists, and it isn't. it has never been that. The case is about Abigail Fisher. We had talked about this when in fact she filed the suit. She filed a lawsuit challenging her inability to gain admission to the University of Texas. And she was trying to make the case. In fact, an independent firm, which is an anti-affirmative action firm, decided to take the case up in order to argue this issue of racial preferences or affirmative action, and took the case on in order to prove the point that the United States by now should be beyond this business of giving preferential treatment to people of color, African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, Native Americans, in cases where they would essentially be on par. That universities, in order to rectify exclusion and deliberate exclusion of people of color in this country, admissions to many universities this was deemed to be a good remedy. And, of course, Abigail Fisher protested and filed a suit. And this is what the Supreme Court has just been hearing. It's interesting to note, by the way, that she did not, as you said, she did not have any grades that would put her within range of some kind of admission at all. But she decided that she was going to test affirmative action or quotas or set-asides on the basis of race, when in fact the issue was that her grades were not up to par. So we'll see how this comes out. The judge, Antonin Scalia, known to be a, well, they say he's conservative, but, you know, that's a kind word. He's not especially insightful. He's not especially brilliant as a judge. But he has made these disparaging comments. And coming from the highest court in the land, one would react, I think, with justifiable you know, just dismay that you'd hear this kind of language coming from a judge. But when you look at the history of court rulings, you see how consistent it is, how trenchantly racist and consistent it is. The law has been consistently racist. And the U.S. Supreme Court making some of the worst decisions and the most flagrantly racist decisions. And I've talked about some of them here. We've explored them in great detail. The Dred Scott case, for example, all of the cases that arise out of the so-called Reconstruction provisions of the Constitution, all having to do with what is the country supposed to do to create a more even playing field for the sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters of people who were forcibly enslaved? The lawsuit, the Fisher lawsuit, just does not even deal with that. The Fisher lawsuit, like most of these arguments, they lift these things out of context as if they have no genesis whatsoever, and you can just start to argue the case in the current time. People just don't give very much attention to the history, the thing that preceded all of these maladies and all of these unevenness coming out of the courts themselves, which were used and still are being used to enforce inequality, not to achieve it. But you're right, it is a very troubling thing. But I do think some people have talked about it. But, you know, Darko, I think we ought to go beyond talking. I keep saying we just have to get in a really severely punishing mode. Just punish this party. Punish the political system.
I think there's some type of thing that we're missing. I think we have to figure out a way to protect our livelihood, ourselves, because I think we are under attack constantly. You know, when I was little, I used to watch things that occurred in the 60s from Like It Is, reading books about, and this started with my parents. They really got me into, instead of, like, we watch cartoons, but they really got us into history, you know. And it was intensive and it was frightening. You know, you're like, oh my God, you know, we were slaved here and this, that, and the other. I mean, just learning about what has happened to us. And I really feel now you know, when they say this is a post-racial society, I laugh at it because my deepest fear is that what I read before as a child, thinking some modicum of safetiness is going away and that we're going to be right back to where we was, but at 10 times worse, because I feel that we constantly are talking, like you said, but we're not doing anything to, I mean, there are some people that are, because it's fragmented. We have people going into the schools, you know, teaching the kids in the urban areas, especially black children, about going into medicine and finding, giving them support, science, nursing, writing. They're all doing this. But I think the historical aspect and how important it is to know who we are and what is at stake and how we can protect ourselves is lacking, I think, is because we're so used to kind of like saying we got to work with everybody, when in fact none of us know who we are, and none of us know that we're constantly attacked, and we need to know why so we can better protect ourselves. You know, knowledge-based, knowledge-wise, whether it's going to Egypt and finding out about history and then figuring out ways to protect ourselves as a race. I don't know, because we're all over the place, I feel. I don't know if that's what you're getting at. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying. But
I understand exactly what you're saying. I certainly do. And I'm glad that you were able to think it out loud today and share it with us. So maybe we'll get a reaction. You never know. Thank you so much for calling and getting us started today, Dako. From New York, Ma'at, you're on the air.
Yes, beloved Utrice, stay well. We love you. This is Ma'at in New York. I need to first thank the engineer and his who said he'll help us, who listened to you on the Zeno phone network, and asked him if he could, after I hang up, if he could keep me on this line, okay, because if I go to my other line to listen, it's inaudible. And also, Ms. Engineer, please note that the volume on Zeno has gone plummeted way, way down. Okay, now that was a very interesting call. The young sister was, her name was Dako?
Dako, yes.
Okay, yeah, because at first I put down Virginia, but that's where she was calling from. Yeah, that's very interesting, that exchange. I noticed that Scalia made this offhand comment. I mean, these people are the epitome of ignorance, suggesting that black people need to avoid what he referred to advanced schools. I mean, that's just nonsensical, and it shows his overall ignorance, as you said, we're already familiar with. But I want to talk about reminding you, and I have a couple ideas, suggestions, that after the first of the year, we need to have two or three sessions where the community, so it becomes Let the Circle Be Unbroken, to connect with Alton, because there's certain things, as you know, you treat it, only the community, someone in the community will make the connection, and that will give you a certain connection. If I had been able to get through to him, I would have brought up this Baltimore Freddie Gray situation in this respect. This guy Porter, the one black guy, the driver, the one who would have been most far removed from having any direct contact with Freddie Gray, is all being swept under the rug. So if everyone looks at the video, okay, and a woman trying to make those two white police officers aware, Freddie Gray could not put his feet, he could not, not only could he not walk, but his feet couldn't literally stand. He couldn't lift his head up. So the point is that I think it was 80-some percent of his neck being broken. That happened, and the woman who's trying to get the attention that this guy's got a big problem, you know, as they were dragging him to the van, that's something that's got lost in the shuffle. And the black DA, okay, and everyone's so excited about her, she just is not dealing with those two white. In other words, before they gave him this so-called joyride, and there's no way that he would have had those type of energies from just about any kind of a ride that wouldn't have hurt anybody else in the van. So I just wanted to bring that out. The other point I want to make is I want to. This is sort of director and greetings to the beloved Lead Stories Radio family. And Ali, it was so good to hear your voice. And to sisters Patricia and Sarah, we're looking forward for you to be part of this circle. But I want to read a sentence from a Trine Day book, The Most Dangerous Book in the World, 9/11 as Mass Ritual. And this is like three books in one, because there's several appendices, and there's also a predictive type of a situation in terms of the next 9/11. But this is from Appendix C, and it's an excerpt from a book also at Trine Day called Welcome to Terrorland, Muhammad Atta, the 9/11 cover-up in Florida. So this is called the Muhammad Atta myth, and it seems that
One sentence, but we need to get to it.
Yes, but it's important to understand that certain military bases had the names of these so-called alleged hijackers in terms of being officers at these bases. And Daniel Hopsicker is the author of that book. And the sentence is, it says, the human rights lawyer Richard Falk has written, and Richard Falk was the one who I heard on a radio program, following up on what Gary was talking about, the coverage of the Palestinians and the Israelis. He was the one that said, spoke of the virulent racism of the so-called Israelis. Okay, so quote, there are so many gaping holes in the official accounts of 9/11 that no plausible, coherent narrative remains. And until now, we have been staggering forward as if the truth about these traumatic events no longer mattered. And I'm directing that especially to Phil and to DX. There's too much information out there. And in my next call, I'll mention some of the important titles and Jim Fetzer's scholars for 9/11 truth at Al, at Al, at Al. And thank you. And engineer, please keep me on this line.
We don't know if it's possible, because they are working
on some technical issues
as we speak, as a matter of fact. But thank you for calling, and thank you for making that contribution today. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We are extending this forum that began last week because we had such incredible traffic, people wanting to express their thoughts about the issues of the day or about things that they think are worthy of further discussion and debate, much to discuss in these times. We'll take this short break and come back to your calls at 888-874-4888 right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we are continuing our open forum from Friday, and that was continued from, actually preceded by our open forum on Thursday. Lots and lots and lots of stuff to talk about, and particularly to get your take on what's happening. How do you see things? How are you making sense of these things? What is it doing to shape your attitudes and hopefully your actions in the current moment that we're in and certainly in the future? 888-874-4888. Well, much has been said about Donald Trump. He is supposedly now the leader, and the leading candidate among Republicans, and Hillary Clinton is said to be the leading candidate among Democrats. And I tell you, it's the choice of the evil of two lessers and the lesser of two evils. That's what you got. That's the best that this country apparently can do. This is how politics works. If you're Hillary Clinton, you can buy your way into the presidency. If you're Trump, you can do the same. And the whole business of so-called democracy is just a charade, just an exercise in futility, really, because it has nothing to do with democracy at all. It's a show to justify the fact that, well, look, we had an election and somebody won it supposedly fair and square. And look what we've got. Look what we have. It is embarrassing. We should be embarrassed that this is what we've got. This is the best that is available in a political year with so much at stake. Unbelievable. From Brooklyn, David, you're on the air.
Yes, I just want to say I have no interest in these two capitalist parties and their charade with respect to democracy and whatnot that we don't have. And what comes to my mind right now is how they get away with tricking people for so long. What I'm thinking about is the system we have that is in effect here, the economic system of corporate capitalism, and how effective it is in dividing all the people in the country. And what I am thinking about right now is how it gets away with tricking people, especially those people with the phenotype that they call white, how they don't see that having a system like this where a substantial number of the people are poor, including so-called white people, is not in their interest. Is it just that they get enough extra benefits that they feel that it's worth worshiping these oligarchs who run everything? I'm just wondering what would take to get white people to get it.
Well, it's, they do not have a monopoly on ignorance. It is astonishing to me that the people most oppressed seem to be most unaware of their oppression.
Agreed.
And, I think this is where a change is beginning to occur. Do you see any sense at all of people beginning to get it? You see no indication at all that people across the board are beginning to get it?
Yeah, well, I don't see much in that respect. I think that the way I look at it, the oligarchs are so good at what they do that they will always come up something to inflame the situation of divide and conquer even more so they can maintain control. I don't believe that people, I don't even know it's possible for people to get it when they're getting extra benefits. And that's what I see. I have no indication now that that has really changed. And so things are different. I mean, they put so-called black people into high places, and they do other things. But the conditions of all the people, including the white and the black people, they're deteriorating somewhat. I mean, people are getting poorer, and the social conditions are bad and not as good as in other industrial countries. And I believe that's because the oligarchs have the luxury of having black people here. That's an asset for them because you can stir up more trouble and divide people more. You can't do that in Norway or maybe Sweden or Finland or somewhere as much as you can do it here. That's why they're so successful. And this is the most advanced capitalist country in the world and the richest, because it's got black folks here that you can scapegoat and have one group fighting against the other to extract more resources from the wealth of their work and the resources of the country.
I think that I would not disagree with you too much, but just a little bit, because I think if you look at the Occupy movement, for example, I think you would see the beginnings, the kernels of an awakening that there is more shared, more in common on the basis of class than on the basis of race. However, we know that both race and class are used hand in glove here in the United States as divide and conquer techniques. But the Occupy movement seemed to signal an awareness of what was shared as opposed to what divided.
I think the Black Lives Matter movement. Dead now. It's nearly dead. I mean, they killed it. The ruling class, the oligarchs, they put their police forces into motion, and they got rid of it.
Well, I think it's like any movement, any kind of movement in a scenario such as this. It takes time. And it takes a lot of time to build awareness, which is why I like the idea of opening up the forum so that people can start talking to each other. And you will find that people begin to realize that everybody's been had. Some more so than others,
exactly,
I agree.
Exactly, that's my point.
But everybody's been had at one level.
Including white people, they've been had.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, in a way, yes, and in a way, no, because what I focus on is the degree to which people who are really, really oppressed are compelled by, you know, the cooperating forces, i.e. the media, for example, and other systems that have a sympathetic view in white supremacy prevailing. What is very disconcerting is that those communities that are most oppressed seem not aware of the extent of the oppression, which is one thing, but not aware of their power to resist it and to organize effectively against it, to the point where, as we've been seeing with this, the regularity of the police killings and other killings, other forms of self-annihilation, we clearly are not getting the point fast enough, because this has been going on for centuries now, and we've got to come to grips with it. So I have to ask you, do you hold out any hope at all that there would be a reawakening of some sort across the
world? Well, there will be some reawakening. But the oligarchs are going to move their military and police to clamp down more on the people. They're not going to give up all their privileges and benefits willingly. I think they're going to hold it. It won't be like it was in the Great Depression where they throw some benefits out. They're going to resist more now. They are not going to do the same thing. I don't believe they will. So
I agree with you. So in light of that, what therefore should the response be?
Well, the response has to come from the masses of the people. They have to do what is necessary to put that pressure on the ruling elite, on the oligarchs, to get some movement. It's not going to come if we have the status quo like it is now. We've got to do much more. And we can start at the community level, the neighborhood level. We need to take, for example, in New York, we need to take control of our schools again rather than turning it over to the mayor. and rich communities, you think they turn over their schools to the mayor? No, they have a school board, and a local school board should control the schools and control the police and have a big influence on what is done in the community. That's a start, and that's something that's doable. And I believe that it would be a big step in the right direction. Here in New York, there's no reason why one person should be the dictator of the schools and have a $1 billion budget to just do what he wants to do with it, and the people in the neighborhood have no say-so. That's absolutely wrong. So that's the one that... the item that I would say in local communities, start working to control the services in your own community.
I think that's an excellent point. I really think so. Thank you so much, David, for putting it on the table today. Thanks for calling. From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And you, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'd like to say good morning from California to all the PRN listeners. And
thank you.
Been really enjoying the show the last few days and just been thinking a lot. And one thing I really enjoyed was when you had Alton Maddox on the last couple of weeks and he was breaking down all of these cases. That was really nice.
Thank you.
I think, as Daco said, the first caller from Virginia, we are under attack as a people, not only just us black people, but all brown people are under attack. But it's worse, I think, because we not only, it's not just about losing opportunities, we're actually on the way to being extinct if we don't do something about this. I mean, you know how many people we have in prison. 65% of the people in prison, I believe, are black or Hispanic, and we have 2.1 million people in prison. So there's some things we need to do here to stem the tide of this, and of course you got the killings. Every other day you hear about a black or brown person being shot down in the streets. So we have to do some things, and I think Alton Maddox, as he always says, he has a very brilliant point that, you know, we need to learn legalese. As he said, the system only understands two languages, legalese and militarism, and it's true. And I wouldn't suggest the militarism part, but we really need to learn legalese, and we need to support people like Alton Maddox and other black attorneys. We have a lot of legal might in our community, but we don't use it. And we need to start bringing some of these cases, like he was saying. That's the legal aspect of it, so I 100% agree with that. Another thing we need to do is we need to, as you have indicated, we need to dump the Democratic Party. Seems like we're hooked on the Democratic Party. Hillary Clinton has a strong majority in the black community right now, and I guess people it's reflex. You got to support the Democratic Party. But I would take it even further than dumping the Democratic Party. I think we need to realize that we're really dealing with two heads of one snake here. Democrats are not much better than Republicans, and so we need to look at alternatives.
What would those be from your perspective?
From my perspective, I agree with something you said before, which is that we need to start with people locally and build it. It's going to take some time. We need to build these candidates so that we can actively vet them as they're coming along. Start them off on the local level, you know, and then eventually we'll get there. I think that's a very good idea as a starting place, because then we know who we're dealing with, you know. But I would add something to this. There's a third wheel to this, too. Not only legally and politically we need to flex our muscle, but you need to use everything you have in your arsenal, every power you have. And one of the powers that I pointed out before is the power of money. Black people spend how much, Utrice? $1.1 trillion in this economy every year?
Oh, it's more than that now. It was estimated at
$1.5 trillion. That's a lot of power. And that's just black people alone. So you know, this thing we have in our community about the materialism and wanting to have this and have that. I talk to people all the time, and, you know, they want to get the iPhone, they want to get this jewelry, they want to get rims on their car, they want, you know, they're really going hard with consuming stuff. So, you know, we have to break that. We really have to break that, because if we stop shopping for 1 week, just black people, it would bring this economy to its knees. And then maybe these killings in the street would stop, or they would do something about it, start prosecuting these officers and sending them to jail or whoever does it, you know. So that's another point. But there's also the media as well. Now, I'll give you one example. We heard about a couple of weeks ago the shooting in Riverside, or San Bernardino, out here in California. Immediately, it was labeled terrorism. As soon as they found out it was a dark person, brown people, terrorism. I even heard some of my black friends saying that, too. This, you know, this terrorist and this and that and that and that. But a couple of weeks before that, we had this shooting in Colorado Springs. That was a white guy. Nobody said anything about terrorism. He was just a lone wolf that's crazy. But terrorism is just inflicting harm and terror on people because of a political agenda or some kind of thing you're disgruntled about, some issue. So he was heard to say, no more baby parts. So to me, he had a political agenda. So that's terrorism. But nobody said anything about it. See, we have to stop enforcing this system in every way, because we're enforcing our denial by our demise by shopping, by listening to the corporate media and basically taking everything they say as fact or whatever, and the way they characterize these things, we're taking it to heart. So I noticed as well in that shooting in Colorado Springs, they arrested the guy and brought him in. These two people who did this shooting in San Bernardino, immediately they just capped him and they were done. So this whole culture here is sick. And we as a people are participating in it. And I don't mean just black people. All brown people and even the white people are participating in this system. And it's only a matter of time before the power elite quote-unquote, pull the trigger on everybody who doesn't have any status or wealth. You see what I'm saying? So this is only going to get worse.
Well, thank you for your thoughts today, DX. Thanks for contributing.
Thank you. Have a great day.
We go to Chicago. Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. I wanted to take this conversation a little bit, you know, unconventional for the topics that we typically talk about, because I want to get into the field of entertainment. I know we don't talk about it much, but it's a very important thing I've noticed in the field of entertainment, because, you know, with entertainment, you know, it's part of, you know, the American culture, and it actually, you know, sometimes it changes the views of some people, you know, especially, you know, people who aren't, you know, highly aware of what's been going on, because, you know, as you know, you treat entertainment has been co-opted by the government as well to make people think a certain way about certain people. I bring this up because I just read something not too long ago about they were doing a film on Nat Turner. And, you know, my antennas went up immediately because, you know, obviously I'm not sure how much justice they will do a film on Nat Turner because of the fact that, you know, Nat Turner has, you know, significant importance in our history. And what they, you know, how they portrayed Nat Turner in the William Stryton novel, you know, was just absolutely, you know, horrendous. And, you know, had a lot of people thinking, you know, about how Nat Turner, you know, thought that, you know, how white people thought about Nat Turner. So after I read the rebuttals by some of the other African scholars about Nat Turner, it basically changed my opinion on the whole thing of Nat Turner. So I was thinking about that because of the fact that, you know, how Hollywood does our history. And it's done purposely because of the fact that they don't want you to understand, you know, the real reason why we should learn about Nat Turner, because of the fact that, you know, and even though, you know, people tell me that it, you know, it's being done and written by a black person, it doesn't make me feel any better because of the fact that it's still Hollywood. So I was just thinking about that because of the fact that, you know, we have been portrayed in entertainment, you know, as, how should I say, ghetto-ish. And, you know, when you take a look at shows like Empire and stuff like that, you know, we're always portrayed in a negative light. So it will be nice, you know, for once to, you know, just have a couple of shows right now that, you know, portrays us positively, you know, in particular mainstream media. I don't know if you were familiar with the documentary Hidden Colors, Utrecht.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, the thing about that, you know, that's done by Tariq Nasheed, you know, a lot of people kind of, you know, criticize him for some of the past work he's done. And actually, you know, I've seen the Hidden Colors, and there are some question marks in what some of, you know, what some of he presents in his documentary. But the thing about it is that it sparks a conversation with people who I would have never thought would be interested, you know, in their particular history, which to me is a good thing. Because the thing is that he brings this documentary and he sparks sparks thought, you know, about, you know, our history and ourselves. And, you know, I honestly believe that it's one of the major things, because I talk to people out in the streets about it and they're like, oh yeah, I saw it. It's pretty good. I actually like it. And for some people, it actually, you know, brings them to a level of learning more about the history. So, you know, stuff like that, you know, if that can be brought out to, you know, at least to the wider audience, you know, to our people, I would definitely feel that this would spark at least some sort of knowledge within ourselves, you know, from some people who don't even bother to look at, you know, history and how it impacts them. So,
well, I mean, I would like to think so, but I have a different view. I really believe that it would take something really seriously dramatic for people to wake up, because they've had enough hints already over the centuries to wake up, to do something. But Kwame Ture says that the first thing is to make the unconscious conscious, and it's a long, long process. We there's no rationale for why people so oppressed are also so reluctant to do something, and we can't make judgments about that either, and I would caution about that, because part of oppression is in fact to cause you to do nothing. To give you the sense that you can't do anything, and to believe it, to internalize it, and to actually embrace that way of thinking, so that you're constantly, you know, beaten down without any idea, even in the remotest sense, that you can actually do something about it. So hopefully these are things that would encourage people to see how important it is to just go beyond this state of inertia and try and get something going in one way or the other to address the nature of our existence, which is very, very sad indeed. Thanks, Henry, for calling today.
All right, thank you.
And that brings us to the end of the program. Still more people we haven't gotten to yet, but I do like the idea of people having the space and time to stretch out a bit and to make themselves plain and heard. Thanks so much for being with me today, and stay tuned. Coming up next is the Global Research News Hour, and you can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. As always, a great pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. I thank you so much, those of you who have started Lead Story Circles and you beginning to share your thoughts about programs airing on this, particular issues airing on this program. It's a real wonderful compliment, and I thank you for that. But I also thank you for the fact of affirming that the program has value, and it has value in that it encourages people to think. If for no other reason, I am deeply honored for just that. So we'll see each other tomorrow, and thank you once again for being with me today. Bye-bye.